Stephen Mayne, how are you?
I'm very well.
I'm glad to hear you. See you sitting there smiling at those memories with your hair shorn off. By the way, you've given yourself the haircut that so many economies around the world have taken.
That's right. I think 100,000 Australians have been shorn this last little period for the Leukemia Foundation, the world record shave or something.
Yes, so, I see what it is.
Yeah, it's a big thing. So
have you raised quite a bit of money?
I don't know. I was in Brisbane giving a talk on Friday and they were all doing it. And I was a guest speaker.
You were sheep-like.
I've been looking for an excuse to shave it for a while to scare my kids, and I thought, my wife's always been saying no, and I thought, well, if I go to Brisbane and say it's for charity and I have to do it, I was pressured into it. I'm interstate, you know. So it's very cold out there at the moment,
yes.
I can tell you.
Did they fall for that story, by the way?
Oh, the kids love it.
Forced into
it? Yes, my wife. You know, we had our daughter's fifth birthday on Sunday, and my wife's going, oh, but all the mothers will think you're a skinhead. Look at you.
Have you got five tats on?
Look like you're a prisoner of war. No, I haven't, but I just can't look mean no matter what I do.
It's not bad. It's mean-ish. Yeah, it's not Norton.
I remember going to Old Trafford to see a Manchester United play about 10 years ago, and I was a bit nervous about soccer hooligans and stuff, so I did the full shave there, put the leather jacket on, the big boots, and everyone was making a wide berth for this in a big lanky skin.
Well, fair enough. I'm frightened of you. I don't think many people
terrifying.
Know that. People
terrifying.
Asked me once, are you afraid of John Fane? No. Are you afraid of Brent Simons? No. I'm afraid of Stephen Mayne.
Oh, goodness
me. That's what I said. 5:45, Lindy Burns, together with Stephen Mayne this afternoon. I'd never heard of Bear Stearns until Sunday, Monday. When did it all break up?
Well, over the weekend.
Yeah.
This was one of the great weekend stories. It's not often things happen on Saturday night and Sunday night and this sort of stuff, but, 20 billion walks out the door late last week, massive run. Shares fell 47% on Friday, and then they go cap in hand to the Federal Reserve and say, we're broke, get someone to save us. It's only one US bank that's got a balance sheet that's worth fighting for at the moment, which is JP Morgan. The rest of them are all desperate for capital and trying to save themselves, let alone save anyone else. And so JP Morgan, $2 a share.
Offered.
Yeah, they've taken it over for $2 a share.
Right.
And
what were the shares worth, say, a week ago?
Oh, a week ago they were 50, and last January 07, they were $1.171 when the company was worth $21 billion. So in terms of rapid wealth destruction, what we're seeing right now is right up there. I mean, in terms of history, probably Enron, I think, is the only one I can think of where it was a top 10 American company. 12 months later, it was broke. So that was closer to $100 billion that disappeared in the space of a year. But this is $21 billion in 13 months. And I think this is the one that will shake America more than Drexel Burnham in the 80s and more than long-term capital management, which was the big collapse of a hedge fund back in 98, and more than Enron, because it's Wall Street, because it's Masters of the Universe, and because it's basically poisoning the global credit system.
Well, I was watching a bit of Sky News, the UK version. I think it was this morning, and they had it's from last night. It's sort of their 10 o'clock.
Mm.
And they were looking at the headlines for today over there. Every major daily there, do we use the big word depression? They're not even using the R word. They're using the D word. And this is a flow on from what's going on in the States and what's happening there as well. And I guess Northern Rock was their big fallout.
Yeah.
But I just looked at that and I thought, this is bigger than I think we here in Australia, who may not have a lot to do with what's going on in the financial world, are actually giving credit to
for. That's right. We had a five-year credit boom, unprecedented credit boom, which basically I think some people try to link it to the Iraq war, but if you go back and look at it, the Americans put their interest rates down to 1% or 2% after their last recession. And so basically this was easy credit. And then the world went crazy. And it just borrowed money on borrowed money. I mean, Bear Stearns had $400 billion of assets or loans supported by around $12 billion of equity. So you can see how it leverages up. If you've got a certain amount of equity, you can lend that so many times over and over. And I guess the Americans, I mean, people talk about, isn't it great how we have a budget surplus in Australia and you've always got to have a budget surplus. This is sort of bipartisan now in Australia. The Americans have had a budget surplus that's averaged 2.2% of their GDP for the last 40 years. And they have a massive current account deficit, and the American government owes $7 trillion.
So how do you get away with that?
Well,
how can you say it's a surplus?
Are America. and because everyone wants to give them money. I mean, literally $2 billion a day goes into America.
But how can you say that it's a surplus if you owe all that money? No one would do that at a home budget.
Well, that's right. But because it's America, people want to invest in America. They want to lend the money cheaply. They want to own property in New York. They want to invest in their stock market. They are the great superpower. And that's been the deal, basically, is that America is too big and strong. It's the superpower. It can't go broke. But I think this one is different because they've basically exported a virus, if you like, that they've 10% of Americans who shouldn't have got home loans from these nongs on Wall Street, so-called masters of the universe. About half a trillion or close to $1 trillion is going to be lost when this is all over. And they've sold these loans to the rest of the world. So everyone's taking huge hits. The Chinese government, you know, our super funds, everyone's taking huge hits. And I think it is very much a made in America, made on Wall Street crisis.
Can they unmake it? Can they
fix it? Well, they're trying desperately, but I mean, what more have they got left in the closet to pull out? I mean, all these firms like Citigroup, Merrill Lynch and all these guys, they got bailouts from foreign governments last year. The American government hadn't got any money to do actual equity bailouts. And then this time around, all those investors have lost about $10 billion rescuing all these firms last year. And now we have Bear Stearns actually going broke, which would have caused a massive seismic crisis in the system and a lawyer's picnic for a decade. And so they're too big to go broke. And so the Federal Reserve came in and said, well, look, we've already, we've got $7 trillion in debt here, but we'll come up with another $30 billion. We'll make that available to JP Morgan, take them over for $2, put them out of their misery. And, we'll also cut interest rates again tonight. We'll also allow investment banks to pretend they're commercial banks. So they've rewritten the rule book last night or over the weekend. They said previously, if it was Australian terms, Commonwealth Bank, National Australia Bank can borrow off the Reserve Bank.
Mm-hmm.
But Macquarie Group and Babcock can't because they're investment banks.
Yes.
They're not licensed in the same way. Mm-hmm. Their deposits aren't guaranteed mm-hmm. by the central bank. And they've just said over the weekend, now we basically guarantee them and they can all come and borrow off us just like they're a bank. And this is just unbelievable. So there's going to be a massive regulatory backlash against the banks that have caused this crisis. The world is angry, and American prestige, when you combine it with Iraq, it's a huge hit to American prestige right now that we're seeing.
It's 9 to 6, Stephen Mayne with me and you this afternoon on this Tuesday. Wendy Bird's here at 774 ABC Melbourne. Let's come back home. Let's come back to Australia. A bit of a flat day from what I heard from Sarah earlier this afternoon. A call, though, asking about the National Australia Bank and its falling share price. I don't think it's the only one. What are the prospects there for the banks? I think they've stabilised a bit today.
They have stabilised a bit today, but look, 40% has come off the value of the banks from their peaks last November. That's wiped $110 billion off the value of our banks. They've gone from $275 to roughly $165 billion in value. That is unprecedented in Australian market terms. But their share prices are, on average, NAB accepted, are still well above where they were at, 3, 4, 5 years ago. So our banks are still strong. We're very lucky in that regard. It's just a question of how strong, because the whole non-bank market's collapsing. Everyone's getting out of home loans except for the banks in Australia. So I think the banks are probably going to have to raise some capital, significant amounts of capital. And if you do that, you've got to issue new shares, and that sends the share price down, et cetera.
Right.
And there's a great deal of fear about bad debts. I mean, for instance, just today, there's a property trust called Rubicon Japan Trust. Now, it's one of the Allco stable. And they today have been suspended. They've put out a press release. They've suffered a margin loan call from NAB. NAB's demanding $30 million come back from them straight away. It looks like they might be broke. This is a trust which raised $400 million in total, and they owe about $1 billion, and they have about $1.4 billion in Japanese property. So this is what's happening here at the moment, is a lot of superannuation money has gone into exotic, Japanese property plays, all geared to the eyeballs for tax reasons and leverage reasons. And it's all slowly unravelling. Every day we're hearing a new one. The other big story today, for instance, was that Tricom, which was that stockbroking firm which famously couldn't settle its deals, was going to be rescued by Bell Financial Group, another stockbroker. Well, Bell's pulled out of it today. Tricom might be going under. The talk there is that ANZ could suffer a hit, maybe 20, 30 million, depends on what their exposure is. And so it's just the drip, drip, drip. And if you go around the grounds today, I mean, the market was only down 9 points, but Challenger Financial Group, which has got the Packers as the biggest shareholder, shares down 18% today to a record low. Centro down 14% today to a record low of 24 cents. ABC Learning down 6.5 cents to $1.44 today, a record low. And Eddie Groves, the CEO, who got $41 million from his margin calls when dumping his shares, did well because they're now only worth $30 million, those shares. So, and Orco Finance Group down 5% to a record low of 26 cents. And the other interesting story today was MFS, which is this Gold Coast-based sort of financial company, property developer, owns Melbourne Aquarium and Mount Hotham and all this stuff. Andrew Peacock was going to be thrown out as the chairman at a meeting on April the 7th, which some disgruntled shareholders have called. And in a classic sort of political negotiation, the Kooyong cult has agreed to accept three new candidates on the board from his critics, and they've called off the meeting.
Oh, so, really? That's
it's almost like
deal.
Putting your backbench critics into the cabinet to stop the leadership coup. So Andrew Peacock has hung on to his job there for a while, but I think MFS has been suspended for a couple of months. Going nowhere fast. It's a train wreck.
66, it's a train wreck, absolutely. A couple of quick calls from people. By the way, a car has broken down in the left lane on the Burwood Highway after Ferntree Gully Road. Stay right, says the text message, and be patient. Left lane on Burwood Highway after Ferntree Gully Road. Where do you think the Aussie dollar is getting to, will go to?
Well, I think it'll keep rising against the US because they're so weak, but it's not going anywhere too fast against the rest because we're seen as a slightly risky economy, and we've got $610 billion of foreign debt. So we're actually going badly against the yen at the moment, and against the euro we're not particularly rising, even though we've got fantastic terms of trade. But I think it'll stay high against the Americans. I mean, if the Americans are going to cut their interest rates tonight from 3% to 2%, and we're, you know, the last country in the world lifting rates, then you can get good rates here. So the money will come here chasing
until
our high interest rates until our Reserve Bank wakes up and says, well, the rest of the world's going the other way, we should join them.
And Lisa says that our super, as of today, has dropped 20%. My husband was in fixed income and lost. How does that work?
Well, that's what everyone's doing because that's the story right here now, because basically bond prices have collapsed. The credit markets have collapsed. So
what does fixed income mean?
Fixed income is just debt paper.
Right.
So the government bonds, that's fixed income. And they've all fallen by 20%. And that is what the collapsing of the credit bubble is, means the paper, the credit paper, which is all parceled up from home loans in the US and sold around the world, has all collapsed in value. Even when the loans are performing, even when the bonds
amazing.
Are still paying interest,
yes.
It's just ground to a halt basically globally. And there's this, the trend now is it's a global deleveraging.
Is there a country that if the US can only be the country that got us into this, potentially might not have to be the country that gets us out? Is there? You talked about Japan seems to be going okay. Is Europe okay? What where can we go? What's the light at the end of the tunnel?
I think the sovereign funds. The Russians have got $450 billion, the Chinese have got $1.3 trillion, Singapore's got $200 billion. So it's the sovereign, Norway's got $400 billion. The sovereign funds, the countries, it's ironic that many of the undemocratic states mm-hmm. have amassed huge government surpluses, whilst the democracies,
because they haven't had to spend anything.
Well, I guess they don't have the democratic pressures.
Yes.
I mean, in
yes.
China, appalling health services, yet the government amasses $1.3 trillion.
Yes.
If that happened in Australia, there'd be riots about, more hospitals and schools. So the democracies are all hocked to the eyeballs, and the cash is all with particularly the Asian nations and those in the Middle East which have ridden the oil boom.
We've got to get one day, we'll sit down and work out how a government can be in surplus but still be in debt, because I think you can't answer that in 2 minutes because it's going to take more of an explanation, but just trust us that we'll get to the bottom of it one day. Because a number of people have called about that and it's still, it needs an explanation.
Our federal government is not worth anything.
And yet?
Yet. They're going to make a $17 billion surplus this year with huge tax cuts because they've got massive liabilities of debts and unfunded superannuation.
Yeah, I don't see how that works either. So we'll get to the bottom of that perhaps in the next couple of weeks. Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you, Lindy.